tackle five. This is the last. It's bounced away to Thurston. Comes up Blair. Got rid of Blair. Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball away. And Felt. Felt has scored.
Welcome to the podcast. The podcast of the Facebook page, Totally Addicted to Supercoach. I'm Drew and Julian's here with me today, and we thought we'd give this podcasting a bit of a go. Me and Julian talk strategy amongst ourselves. We talk Supercoach all the time, so we thought, hey, why not record it and hopefully we can give something back to our followers of our page. In our first episode today, we're going to be talking the highest paid players in each position. So that is obviously in the hookers, we've got Harry Grant. Second row, front row, we've got Papali'i and Fifita, and then we touch on Cleary, Cody Walker, and in the Senator wings we've got Brian To'o, Garrick, and obviously in the fullbacks we've got Tommy Turbo. So let's kick it off. We'll start with the hooker position. Harry Grant is the one most people might be stuck on. Sorry, he is missing round one. He's currently in my team. I've got Randall and Grant. I'm happy to play Randall for that first week. Hopefully he pumps out a solid 40, 50, 60 would be nice. And Grant on the bench there, and I'll just slot him back in round two there. What's your thoughts there, Julian? Grant is missing round one. Is he in your team?
He is missing round one, but like I think I was listening to a pod the other day and he's at 45% ownership. And honestly can't go past him, really. Like, we've been blessed in a sense. I know it's bad for Jaden Brayley with the injury, but it looks like we're going to get a Chris Randall for 50 to 60 minutes. So, but Grant, like, because we're talking about top players in their position, Grant averaged what, a 73 point average in his minutes in his games that he played over 75 minutes. And that was only three games he started. But he was a standout in that position. I think for the rest of it, he averaged something like, from games from the bench, he played 50 minutes plus with a 56-minute average, where he averaged 69 points. Now, yes, a draw starts pretty tough. We've obviously suspended round one, but then he has the Souths, but they have a few like key outs, like Adam Reynolds is obviously left. Latrell isn't back. They got a new rookie half. The Eels after that, which is usually a pretty close game with the Eels and the Storm. Then he faces the Dogs and Raiders. So I honestly think he could get off to a good start. And I do believe he's going to be the top scoring hooker. What about you?
Definitely, without a doubt, Grant's going to be there. He's going to be up the top. There is a lot of talk about Damien Cook coming back into the picture, but until Souths find their rhythm with their new team structure, I can't really see it happening too much. There is obviously the discussion with Brandon Smith still looming around, the Storm layout, but there is talk, you know, with Finucane gone, that he could fill in that lock when, I don't know if he'll spell Grant come towards the end of the 80 minutes or anything like that, because you look at Brandon Smith, some of them games last year, he was gassed, eh?
Yeah.
He's definitely not an 80-minute player. Grant just seems to just chug on and on and on. Do you think Brandon Smith's going to be taking any minutes at dummy half this year? Like, Bellamy's pretty ruthless with his roster, and Brandon Smith's definitely in no one's good books at the moment down at Melbourne Storm.
Yeah, I completely agree. I reckon if it wasn't for, like, obviously Storm have lost Finucane, he's gone to Sharks. Kamakamifa's stood down with his assault charges, and then we've got Big Nelson, who's we don't know if he's vaxxed yet or not, so who knows what he's going to do
when
he's signed with Union. So they are pretty skinny, especially in the middle, so I can see a world where Brandon Smith moves to 13. And like you said, he does get gassed. I'd be surprised playing that role, he'd play 55, 60 minutes. So I could see a world where Grant does play at like 70 plus, and he's just looking at it just then, he's five to 6 points higher than Mahoney, or Marnie, sorry. who realistically, if you take Brandon Smith out of the equation, he's the next best half, hooker. So, and Marnie sort of played like 80 minutes from the start of the season, had a really soft draw, got a lot of attacking stats and then sort of dropped back down when he came back to the park. I know he had a few injuries in there, but I just see Grant as, if you can lock him in now, he's not hampered by any injuries. He was affected by that MCL to start the season last year. And before that, he was like in line to start at hooker, so he was ahead of Brandon Smith. And then he did obviously pick up that hamstring strain, which I don't know if that was a factor from the MCL, but before State of Origin, he had the hamstring strain. So he sort of was, I would say, more protected by Bellamy throughout the year, being obviously like they're locking in as the hooker for the future there at Storm.
Yeah, no, Grant was always next in line, you know, with the discussion of Cameron Smith retiring and whatnot. Brandon Smith was never really in any heavy future plans at dummy half at the Melbourne Storm, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
I've just got a couple of Grant's stats up here. So Grant's PPM, even though he wasn't playing 80 minutes, his PPM is still 1.3, 1.4 every game. You know, he played minutes, he played low minutes of 45, 47, and then he played one 80-minute game and a 77-minute game against Parramatta in round 24. And his PPM is still huge. It's over one in every appearance he made last year.
Yeah.
You throw an extra 20 minutes on him a game. Do we feel he plays 80 every week?
I think if Storm are ahead, you'll get a like an early rest, like a 70 minute. Yeah. That's what I was saying, probably 70 plus. But I think Bellamy's the type of coach who, if it's a big game against like Roosters or Panthers, then top teams, he's going to want him out there. Looking back at like even at 2020 when he was at the Tigers for that year, he had a 71 average and he started every single game he played when he was named. And his minutes were only 73. So his point per minute was just a little bit under that, like 71 to 73. But that is the Tigers, and Storm are a lot more attacking team and have got a lot more points in them. We saw that. Like, if he's going to have a fit Pappenhausen running up beside him, if he's going to have a Christian Welch, you saw that in a State of Origin game where Christian Welch knew he was behind him through the offload. I was dreaming of that all preseason last year. And then obviously we had injuries. but I was just waiting for that to happen because I could just see it. I was talking up Welch because I was like, yep, he's going to get that offload away. He's going to know Grant's going to be behind him after just playing the ball to him. He's going to be following him, backing him up. He's going to get some try assists and things like that. Grant's going to get more tries. Like, if you look at the Melbourne Storm spine, like last year, I don't think they had a serious run where they had their number one spine all playing together at any time.
That's right. I tried to dig those stats out today, but you can't find them anywhere. Not that I'm aware of. If anyone knows where they are, would love to see them. But, you know, you're exactly right. Like, Grant, Munster and Pappenhausen, how many games have they played 80 minutes all together? It's not going to be many.
Yeah, and I just can't, like, at these price and being, I can see him probably in a, like, 80 average. Like, you just saw like what Brandon Smith did with how his try-scoring ability from quick play the balls and the Storm just making metres down the middle. Like, I know they've lost the middle, but like Brandon Smith had that, like could sniff out the try line, and I think Grant's just as lethal there.
I think Brandon Smith's starting price this year and pedigree is a little inflated by his tries towards back end of the season and stuff. But going over Grant's stats, I've still got him here on the page. Like, Grant's not a known tackler like the Cameron Smith. Like, he's, you know, he does his 28 to 30 tackles a game. But then again, that correlates with his minutes, I suppose, of what I'm looking at. But he definitely makes up for that in try assists and tries. So, like, he scored a double in round 8 against the Sharks, and he's scoring probably scoring a try every four games or something like that. I think once he gets those players around him, 80 minutes every week, you know, your Munster and your Pappenhausen, providing they can stay fit and focused, then I think Grant's going to be an absolute standout at hooker this year.
And it's funny you mentioned that about his tackling stats, because like I've got 2020 season up as well, the stats, and you look at, I think it's more of a fact that in the Storm side, he doesn't have to do as much defense, because he had some 80-minute games there. Like all three of his, he's got three games or four games where he's had 52, 50, 51, 52 tackles, and they're all his 80-minute games, or four of his, I think, 10 80-minute games at Tigers. So he does have that floor of like the 50 tackles. He can do it, but I just don't think it's, he needs to. Like he's got that more time to attack at the Storm because he's not defending. He's not busting his ass doing that.
Exactly right. And then he's got more energy in the tank to offer them attacking stats when they're needed. What's your plan?
On Brandon Smith, like I know moving to 13, it's a different position for him probably. Like I know he did come, he started a hooker and then moved to there. But I could see a world where we've said it before with Cameron Murray so effective for Damien Cook and getting that quick play the ball. He's one that gets down on his knees, gets up, plays the ball, and I can see that is such a big factor for Grant scoring a lot of his tries this year. Is Brandon Smith like running hard, getting a quick play, and then Grant just like scooting out, breaking a few tackles or busting the line, passing it to a Munster or someone backing up, Pappenhausen. He's going to have a lot of attacking stats in him, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a role reversal as well. I think that'll probably work both ways. I wouldn't be surprised to see Grant take a run 20 metres out, get tackled 10 metres out, and a quick scoop up from Brandon Smith over the line. They'll work that out. They'll be all over that. All right, so you... Your team makeup, you're obviously starting with Grant on the bench. Obviously, he's missing round one.
Yeah, I think like even Randall at a, like a lot of people are just saying plug him for round one. Like if he can get a 60 minutes, he's shown he's got a good work rate defending. So like a 45 from him, he could even be a good reserve. And like obviously have Grant there. You bring Grant in the second round and you don't have to like practically don't have to worry about hooker till State of Origin. And by then, Randall hopefully has made some money. And then you just move him on to whoever, like Amani, if he looks good, or even Cook after his first few rounds, which were rather difficult. But that's my plan.
I think every hooker's going to sort of, providing they play 80, they're going to offer you at least a 40. Like I can see Randall getting a solid 40, 45 round one. That's all you need. And come round two, you'll slot Grant back over there. I would like to have seen Grant go up against the Tigers, though, after they looked after him for 2020.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Right, mate. Next on our list is our front rower. So, obviously, Payne Huss at $595,000. I think he offers a lot of great value there. Bringing up Huss's stats from 2021, look, they're not... They are up there. They're elite, but they're not what you would expect from Payne Huss, providing... the Broncos had another off season there under Kevy. What's your thoughts on Payne Huss? Should we all be starting with Payne Huss? A lot of teams I've seen on Facebook and everyone posts their teams, Huss is always there. I don't think I've seen anything different. Huss is sort of locked in for everyone else. What's your thoughts?
I just think Huss at 595K when he started last year at 668,000. And I think in 2020 was even more expensive than that. Let me just check it. He started at 728K. So like that is a significant drop. And I know I saw it on another channel. He had a 75 point average in 2020 and a 78 point average in 2019. So I know forward points have went down. But I think he is the safest lock-in at that price in front row forward.
Has to be.
Like you just look at his average, and I don't want to – like I know obviously we've got – being a Broncos fan, we've got Patrick Carrigan coming back. We've signed Ryan James, but I only see that like as a depth, more of a leadership point of view to try and teach these younger guys a bit of discipline and how to play out the game and don't back – like. Don't give in. But, like, you look at the stats when Lodge left, and Pangai left from round 16 through to 24, because in 25 he only played 24 minutes against the Knights and he did his syndesmosis injury. But over them 8 games, he played an average of 64 minutes, which isn't massive for Payne Haas, and I'm not expecting more than that. Like even a 60-point average for him. But like in them 64 minutes, he averaged 83 points.
In 64 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I didn't realize that.
And at his price, like he had 1 try in there. He had 2 try assists. Now he is developing. He's still rather young. Like I've heard things with like Ben Eichen talking about him, saying how when he sat down and talked with him, he's such a smart player, and they have hold him in high regard. And I think honestly, when Lodge and Pangai left for whatever reasons, he really stood up and took ownership of the team, and you could just see it with. I know there was a shift. Like I know they were still allowing points. Like there was a game against Sharks and Warriors, and it was try for try. That was coming. Like you can't just fix that in a season. But I think you could see like there's a point where Payne Haas like chased down. I think it was.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
The Sharks game, and he chased it and hit the ball, and you could see like he sort of took control, and he's starting to become that leader of the pack. And I don't think a lot of people will say, like everyone will say, I think by the end of the year, like I'm high on the Broncos. I don't want to get too sort of like high on them because they could let me down. But I think Adam Reynolds is a really good signing. I think Kurt Capewell is, just from the leadership point of view. But I even think Ryan James, because a lot of people forget that he was, like I remember watching him in like one of the first years I got into Supercoach, and he went on a try scoring run, and he was like the forward to have. But at that time, he was also getting suspended, and he had a few issues with the judiciary, and he sort of had a hot head. But then he turned around and became a real leader of, and I think he was a captain of the Titans at the time.
He was.
I think, like going through his injury and like training his body and all that sort of stuff, he's learnt a lot, and I think he'll be able to put a lot of that onto them young forwards at the Broncos.
Yeah, definitely. Just touching back on what you said about Payne Haas there with his efforts and whatnot at the Broncos. The amount of times last season and the year before and their 2020 season, if you want to go back that far as well, the amount of times that opposition teams made a break and the only one chasing was Payne Haas. Like, you know, opposition teams would put the ball in the goal line and Payne Haas would be sliding just coming into camera. You know what I mean? He was chasing down centres and wingers from the middle of the field, whereas no other Broncos seem to be doing that. So, you know, that effort has always been there for him. I don't think he's dropped any effort whatsoever. Like when opposition teams were scoring, you probably missed all that because you had your head in your hands. You're a bit disappointed, but Payne Haas on effort is 100%, 110% every game. So
I think this year
for the Broncos is going to be a great year. I can see the Broncos finishing in the top 8 on the back of effort from Payne Haas, and obviously with their signings they've got this year, like Adam Reynolds and Capewell, they're just going to lift that whole team, especially Payne Haas as well.
Well, let me just say, in them games when Lodge and Pangai had gone, okay, and I'm like, we've seen that shift and that change and that lift in him being taking on that role. Like he's got a 64 minute game and he's got a base and power of 72 points. He's got a 64 minute game, a base and power of 69. A 72-minute game against the Panthers and a 96-point base and power. He's got a 65-minute game again, another 75 points base and power. His lowest base and power in that stint was a 47 in 58 minutes against Sydney, but he still managed to – he scored a try in that game. All his other games, his base and power was up above 65. So that's what you're pretty much paying for, the 68. So, like, anything above that, I think, at his price, I can see him getting to 80, average easy. And he's developing, like, a short pass at the line. His offload's developing, like, I just think he's growing into his body and he's a bit more confident. So, yeah, it's an exciting season for Payne Haas, I think.
Definitely. And Look, he's starting at a good price at $5.95. He's nearly $100,000 cheaper than the next person we're going to discuss, and that's Isaiah Papali'i. Obviously, Papali'i's a dual there. He can fit into your second row, and he can obviously fit into the front row there as well. But obviously, David Fifita is your highest second row. We'll touch on him shortly. But what's your thoughts on IPAP this season at Power? Obviously, he signed that new contract. He's got 1 year with them. What's your thoughts?
There's a world where he could do that all over again and be just as good. But a lot has to sort of go right for that. Well, obviously, we saw Ryan Madison have a serious head knock again, and then we didn't sort of pick it, but Isaiah Papali'i, he jumped in and got that edge spot and just was so damaging. A few times we heard throughout the season he preferred that middle role to the edge. And then even at the back end, for no reason at all, like, he moved back to starting prop rotation for the last three games.
So did he swap sides last season at one point? He did, didn't he?
He did move around the pack a bit. Like, he didn't play a lot of, like, he did play 80 minute games, but not every game was 80. But he made up for that with a try or a try assist. And he did go from playing in the 12 jersey to the 11 jersey a few times. Like, for, he played in the 12 for six or seven games, we're looking at, and then he moved over to the 11. So whether that means he changed sides of the field. Then going into the 8 in the last three rounds, I'm just worried. We've obviously signing for the Tigers. They've still got Madison. And I'm like, what I have heard from the Eels is that they don't want to re-sign him for next year. So he might, like, a lot of people are high on him with the contract, obviously, contract year.
Playing for a contract, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know, do they keep, like, Madison was on the bench a few games. Like, they play him off the bench. You've got Bryce Cartwright there, who was actually amazing at the Eels, which is surprising. They got Sean Lane, who's another edge. They got Niokora, who I know he signed with the Warriors, but he can fill in an edge. They've got a lot of edges. They've got a lot of middles who all can play big minutes. So for me, like, that, just that signing with another club, the fact that Madison should be fit for the start of the season and that he played three games at the end in the prop rotation and his price, I'm just staying away.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely too expensive. He's, you know, 700,000. You know, you could have your David Fifita for an extra 45,000, extra 50,000. And that's the next bloke that we're going to talk about. I know you've been dying to talk about David Fifita. He's your bit of a man crush there. He started off very, very well last year. Do you see him picking up the pace this year, or at least having the same start as what he did last year?
Well, I remember last year, and I was like, when it first opened, I was like, nah, I can't do it. Don't know, he's going to a new club, new position, like, all them combinations, everything, all them factors. And then I heard something like, he's training the house down. And then I saw him in an All-Stars game, and he just ran across the field and just busted about 10 tackles, like old school Andrew Fifita. And then I was like, nah, he's in my team. And I think you actually started without him last year, didn't you?
I can't remember. Actually, no, I think I did. I started without him. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And then, like, I know a lot of us who did start with him were a bit disappointed. Like, I sort of figured, like, a 60 and 71 minutes on a really hot afternoon against New Zealand, like a tough middle pack, like, first hit out, like, that was sort of decent. Like, if 60 is what he's going to throw out, I'm happy with that, as he's low. But then from there, he just went from strength to strength. He, like, had 105 in 65 minutes of the game after that, which was affected by, I remember I think I was tempted to captain him for this game, just thinking it's a grudge match against the Broncos. And he put on two easy tries, and I was like, he could easily do a third here. And he got a HIA, I think, and he got pulled off. Then he had 112, an 88, 147, a 78, 153, a 66, a 97, and then an 82. And then from round 12, he had a suspension in round 10 and 11 after playing the Tigers. And then he, for some reason, got shifted to the bench. Now, he played a few, he did start a few other games there. He had an 83 in 80 minutes. He had 82 in 49 starting on the at a 12 again, and then he had a 68 in 58 minutes starting again against Para. It's like, I don't know. There is the world where maybe he does start from the bench.
That's my worry. So I've had Fifita in my team for this season. I've had him in and out, purely to free up some cash because I'm concerned that he's going to start from the bench. I know you've got his stats up on the screen at the moment, as do I, but, you know, he started the season last year. Let's have a look. He started against the Warriors, Broncos, Cowboys, Canberra, Newcastle. That was his first five. And after the first five, that's when he started racking up his 100 average in those five games collected. They're not tough opponents. A man on any edge for Fifita's size and caliber can pump out those scores, I think. After Newcastle, he had Manly, South, Broncos, Wests, and he didn't face Penrith until round 10, but obviously he was suspended. So those nine games, you're talking, besides South and Manly there, you're talking the bottom eight of last season. And he come out of them nine games with a points per minute of 1.3. And he was playing 80 minutes. And after that, that's when they come up with the amazing plan to start him from the bench. His points per minute didn't really improve. Like, he's got a PPM in round 9 there of 2.4. Newcastle in round 25, he managed just short of 2 there as well. But he's only playing 58, 48, 55 minutes. What's your concern there? Is there any issue with you starting him if he starts from the bench? Obviously, he's still impactful from the bench, but
that's
a concern.
That's the biggest concern, I would say, at his price. But, like, I'm just pulling up past season stats just so I can get – like, I know what you're saying, like, they are weaker opponents. But, like, he had, like you said, a 78 in 80 minutes against Manly, the game that Tommy came back. So they would have been – I would say that's when Manly, I think Manly towed him up, but he still had a 78. He did score that 153 against Souths, and I'm pretty sure that was in close to a half of football.
I'm pretty sure I was six rows back from the try line, so I was 20 metres away from every single one of them tries, and it was fantastic to watch being a Souths fan that I am.
He would have scored, I think he scored about 10 points in the second half, and Souths completely just around.
I know that the Gold Coast fellow beside me, he had his Supercoach app open and he was spewing. He had Fifita as captain and he'd done nothing in the second half. I don't know what the go was. Eh? He thought he'd done his part and that's it. He just took a back row seat and
he had a 83 against Manly the second time they played him. He had a Canberra Raiders are usually a defensive team and he had an 82 against them in 49 minutes. Like, it's just, it is, like, I would say his biggest, the biggest team that he would face is Storm, where he had a 31 in 73 minutes. But by that time, a lot of things, people, you have to think about is, like, we heard that he had a rib injury that he was getting needled for in them final four or five games. He started this even the 71 and 65 minute games, he started the season coming off an ankle injury that he picked up in an All-Stars clash. So I don't think I know it's like looking in the media and looking at the articles, but everyone's saying he's fit and he's raring to go and however you want to take it, but there was an article where someone interviewed him and said, like, asked him, are you an 80-minute player? And he it sounded like he got really offended and he's like, I'm an 80-minute player. So I can't see a world where you're going to pay a David Fifita what they're paying him to play 55 minutes off the bench. It's just, like, I know he can just break open a game, but I think the Titans, the team they are, like, with their inexperienced spine, if you leave at 20 minutes, 30 minutes to bring him on, you've lost a game. Yep. Like, he can break open a game, but it's like, why do that when you could be already ahead? I looking back at past seasons, like, against good teams, he's got a in 2019, and like Broncos would start to fade then, like 121 against Souths, 116 against Para, like playing 80-minute games, and that's when he first sort of broke onto the scene. Like a 50 against Melbourne, like, that's old. I'd take that from a Fifita against Melbourne. Like, back then they were a tough defensive unit. In 2020, like Broncos, got the spoon in 2020, 79 against Souths in 80 minutes, like a 94 against Sydney Roosters in 80 minutes. So he did have a 41 against Panthers, but like thinking about it, like Panthers would have been putting on points. He's one that's really hard to start without, because like you look at how he started last year and he wasn't 100%, and for them first 12 rounds with the suspension in there, 10 and 11, he averaged 98 points. And when you look at when he just played 80 minutes, and I'm going to leave the suspension in there because he played 79 minutes and he got, the Simbin game, he got Simbin'd on the last minute. And
he also missed two tries in that game too. He had two disallowed tries in that game, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. But in them, it's seven games, he averaged 105 points when he played 80 minutes. And it's like even when if you add in whenever he started, say the games he just started at 12, so including like his HIA games, the first game where he played 71 minutes, a game where he's played Parramatta for 58 minutes, I don't know why, Raiders for 49. He played 73 minutes on Av for the 12 games he started, for the 14 games he started at 12, and he averaged 89 points. So, like, even if he just does that and he starts at 12, he's at his at what he costs, like the 85, he's at 89 for the games he started. With a low score of 31 against Melbourne, which I think they were, like, he was getting needled up. So, I know, like, I'm not putting it all on the injuries, but, like, I think probably somewhere in the season the coach targeted him and said, mate, like, we're paying you this money, you're going to the bench, your work ethic's not there, blah, blah, blah. But you look at, like, Jason Tomalolo at Cowboys, like, Todd Payton came out clear, like, in the presser and said, he's not doing what he's supposed to, he's missing tackles, blah, 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 like, your highest paid player, where, look at the halves he had around him, David Fifita. He had Fogarty.
He doesn't have Tyson Morgan there anymore, yeah.
And he had, I remember screaming at the screen when like Peachy would just like see him and just completely just dummy to him and just keep going like across the field. Like David Fifita's open. Brimson would like left him open a number of times, even like Clark at hooker.
So, that's Peachy. That's nothing to do with Fifita.
Peachy being
a hero, yeah.
The amount of times that he had to create things himself. Like if they can develop a way to get him involved, like I just think he took a lot of the hits, a lot of the pressure for being the marquee signing. Is what I'm saying. Like, he can't do much more unless I think he could probably get into the middle a bit more, like, say, an Angus. But he's so damaging when he runs. I just think, like, you lock him in from the start. If it doesn't look like it's going to work or pay off, like, you downgrade him. But
yeah, come round three, you can easily flick him to your performing second row, whether it is a Angus Crichton or a Josh Curran or a Maddo or something like that.
But he's just. Someone scared to start without, like someone who can put on three tries against like a strong team like Souths, and then go to sleep in the second half. Like it's scary what he could do.
I can't remember the exact score, but we were down 12-14 points at halftime at that Titans match, eh? And I don't know, we come back and end up winning that game, but I think Titans were just rattled, and without their. Not their leader, but obviously with Fifita taking a back seat in that second half, it really impacted the whole team. Like, I think the way Titans' season finished last year, I think that's going to hurt them and motivate them at the same time. So I'm hoping David Fifita gets off to a good start. There's plenty of upside with starting David Fifita in your team. Like Julian just said, obviously lowest score of 31 and a higher score of 153 with an 85 average. That average is not in the middle of his, highest and lowest scores. So the majority of David Fifita's scores are at his average. So you're definitely starting with David Fifita, Julian, hey?
Yeah, he's one of the ones I just can't go without him. I'd like, if he's training well. He's fit. I think he has a big point to prove, being the money he's on. And he's going to be in the media. I think the more he matures, the more he's going to realize that he's going to be in the media because of the money he's on. But he's just, you just look at, like, I think it's, I heard on another pod and about the centers, they just see him and you see their eyes. They don't even want to bar him. Like, and it's, he knows it. He's just, it's playing with under 10s for him. He's just running over people.
I met the bloke 2 years ago when he was still playing for Brisbane. He's a phenomenal human being. He's a tank.
It's even, like you said, he might start from the bench, but the risk, like, obviously if he was named on the bench, I'd be hesitant. And I'd have to really watch trial form, like see what happens in the trials. But like, you look at like a game against St. George in round 19, 134 in 56 minutes. He just toyed with him. And I think Titans lost that game. Well, they're a high scoring team, but I think that's going to stay the same, but their defense is just shot.
All right, moving on. So next on our list is our halfback position, Nathan Cleary. We might just skip Nathan Cleary, Julian. We'll come back and we'll dive into him a bit deeper afterwards. We'll come back. 5'8", so we've got Cody Walker. I have seen a lot of teams online starting with Cody Walker, but I've seen a lot starting with Munster as well. And obviously you've got your Lachlan Ilias there, and your Hastings and stuff to fill the gaps. I myself, in my team, I did have Munster sitting there in the same situation with Grant. But at the moment, and it's just me filling around, I've removed Munster just to accommodate a bit stronger elsewhere. And I've got Jackson Hastings at the moment. We'll dive into Jackson Hastings in another episode. But what's your thoughts on Cody Walker for South Sydney? Obviously, the loss of Adam Reynolds is gonna hinder their attacking style slightly.
I think he's like at his price. He had a career year, and you're gonna have a lot of people are gonna say, like a lot of players last year had a career year, and like all these players probably had a career year because they're at the top of their price and they haven't done that before. And we'll probably get into that in another episode as well, like just about the points and what we think is gonna happen with the points. But at $734,000, I say, like I remember I started with Munster and you started with Walker last year, and we sort of decided, all right, well, let's see who averages it out better. And I just remember like Munster being ahead in one game and I'm like, oh yeah, I've beat you. Like Munster's the right pick. And then Cody Walker would get some junk try. And I'm like, what the hell? So
it's not junk, mate.
It's pretty fluky. But it's not junk, because that's the type of player he is, and he's going to be there for that. He's backing up and he's always on the ball. But I just think, like, you look at Rabbit's draw, they've got Broncos, and like that might look like an easy team on game on paper. They're at Suncorp. It's a home game for Broncos. They're without Bennett, which you may say is a factor or not a factor. I say it is a big factor. Adam Reynolds is gone, so I think he's going to have to take on more of an organising sort of role while Ilias sort of develops into that half or gets used to first grade. They've got no Latrell. They've got obviously Adam Reynolds is going to be fired up for a big game because it's obviously the team who didn't want to sign him so he could be a one club player. So I think it's going to be a bit tighter or a bit bigger game than just an easy walkover. Then they've got Melbourne at Melbourne. So that's another – I think I heard a stat like Souths have never beat Melbourne at home. And I know the team's a lot different, but that's when you've got Munster, Grant, Brennan Smith, and a few others returning.
I'm worried about that one.
Then you've got – and Melbourne touched them up a few times with – like their top players last year, so it is.
Yeah, they beat us 50-0.
Yeah, so the Broncos don't look bad when Storm and that have beaten big the good teams like that. Then they've got Sydney Roosters, and like I know South had them last year, but I'm really concerned that there's going to be some suspensions in that game because Latrell returns, and it's like the grudge match, Manu on Latrell. So I can see Uriah Hargraves like not ending the game because he's going to be sin bin. And then they've got Panthers. So they've got a four game hard stretch, which he could come out and kill it, but I highly doubt it. Adam Reynolds, they say, yeah, all right, he didn't do that much, or you didn't do it from a super coach perspective. But I think he just, the time and space he allowed for Cody Walker, and without Latrell as well, behind him, Latrell opens up so much space for Walker to go himself or go to the winger because the defense is worried about what Latrell's doing. So, not for me.
As a South Sydney fan, the amount of people that have said to me, Adam Reynolds is not a big loss because all our attack goes down the left. It goes through, your Cody Walker, your Gay Guy, your Alex Johnson on the left-hand side there, and Latrell Mitchell sweeping to the left as well. Adam Reynolds theoretically does nothing, but he brings that side to the line and creates that space on that left-hand side, our left-hand edge, all the time.
Yep.
You go through all the highlights. That highlight reel for that particular try on the left edge starts with Adam Reynolds.
Yep.
It doesn't look like he does much, but he's that inspiration in that team, and he pushes it. You look at Cooper Cronk in the Sydney Roosters final. Do you think he didn't do anything? His stats were all noughts. You take him out of that team for that grand final, do the Roosters win?
Yeah, even at the Storm, he was just annoying. You look at any stats for Cooper Cronk, and he was never a big stats guy, but he was the organiser. He'd get Storm into the position, same with Reynolds. He'd get him, even just the kicking game, getting him downfield, getting him set up for the next set. It's just, that is a big factor, I think, more than, say, I know Bennett's left from a few good teams after he's got into a finals, but then I think losing Adam Reynolds is such a big factor. I know Ilias might be great, but he's still unblooded. He's got a few, he's had, I think, a game in first grade, so he's still got a bit of development. And them four games are a hard, hard road to developing into first grade.
Yeah, aren't the stats out? So South Sydney have the first four games are the toughest games of any team this year to start the season.
Yeah, I think looking at it, it looks like that.
I'm pretty sure it is. South is number one. The first four games are the toughest out of all the teams.
I know we're talking about Cody Walker, but even 5'8 right now is it's a really, there's nothing really there. The top three guys all have, Cody Walker's got question marks. He is priced above what you probably want to pay for him with that draw. Adam Dewey's out with his ACL, and I did hear the other day from NRL physio he could be even back round, I think, 5 or 6. But depending how Hastings is going, if he starts in the halves, there could be a world where Adam Dewey starts at the centres. And depending, with the ACL, I haven't looked into it too much, but he might even give up the goal kicking if, say, Hastings does pick it up and he's doing well, just to take that pressure off his knee in recovery. So he's the second highest there. And then you've got Cameron Munster, who's suspended round one, who myself, I'm pretty high on. I am trying to do whatever I can to have him in the team because the way I look at it now is we talked about Grant and with the Jaden Brayley injury, I believe a lot of people, unless you're trying to go sideways, are going to have Chris Randall, Harry Grant from round one. So I think if everyone's going to have that, it sort of takes that out of the equation that, you're running Grant on the bench and you're playing Randall. So if I can get someone who can cover 5'8 for round one and give me some decent points and still have a decent-ish sort of bench, I'm really high on Munster and seeing what he can do off the pierce. I think he's got a big redemption year coming. He's got to decide on his contract if he wants to stay at the Storm or if the Dolphins are calling, he's just had a baby, he said he wasn't playing his best football, he wasn't enjoying it. So I think, and last year was a year without Smith, so he sort of had to take that sort of, is this my team or is it not, sort of role. And we said that at the start of last year, but he just is so consistent. And yeah, he's one I'm real high on. So I think that, the top 3, 5, 8s all have question marks. So that's another discussion.
the strategy there is if you'll start with Munster and Grant, come round two, you've got, you know, probably the best 5'8 to finish the 2022 season, and the ultimately the dummy half that'll finish this season at top as well. So they're two positions you don't have to consider, worry for the rest of the year. You just let them ride. Come Origin, you have to make a few adjustments and stuff, but by round two, you'll be done.
If I can lock them in and still get a rather decent team with the guys I want, that's like you said, even if he's his top two and he averages 70, he doesn't go up and stays where he is, that's still a rather consistent score I'm happy to have in 5'8", like considering what's below him.
And just quickly on the Tigers, mentioned before too, Jackson Hastings and Dewey coming back from injury. I wouldn't be surprised if Dewey does find himself at 5'8 or halfback and Hastings keeps his spot and Luke Brooks moves to a 14, or even if Luke Brooks moves out altogether.
Yeah, that could happen too, because there's been a lot of talk and supposedly the Knights wanted him and Tim Sheens has sort of taken him under his wing since being back there. But like Madge has easily cut him and dropped him into the bench a few times, so it could happen. That's like I looked at it last year. It is the risk you run picking players from the lower sides. The coaches are always willing to chop and change.
What happened first? I'm just trying to refresh my memory here. So what happened first? Did Dewey sustain his injury first before the signing of Hastings, or was the other way around? Because what would have been Tigers' thoughts? If Dewey's fully fit, ready to go round one, and they've still signed Hastings, what was their plan, do you think?
I think they
were both going to start him in the middle.
Or I think they had bought Hastings before Dewey's injury. Whether like Madge saw Dewey is a better centre because he did push in there to centre a few times. But then I think at first it was like Hastings could play that 13 ball playing lock role. And that's why I think they might have, don't quote me on this, but I think they picked up Peachy after the Dewey injury. And that's what I think he'll come in and play. So I think like you're right, he could, depending on Brooks's form, depending on Hastings' form, depending on obviously Dewey's recovery, and if they want him to just be at centre and be at that position, and I know he still gets involved and has his runs and tackles and things like that, but not say do as much running as say a 5'8 or a halfback organising, maybe leave him there for the rest of the season. Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces, I would say, and a lot of form, and I told you to have a good draw. We were looking at it before, but they could. They're still the team that, like the Knights, I'm not high on them. But come round two, if they get touched up by the Storm, even without their guns, that first round, like who knows how they go into the second round? Like it's just, yeah. There's a lot of questions, and if Dewey's coming back early, it just makes 5'8" a real questionable position.
And Dewey's kept his dual position this year too, hasn't he? He's still centre to wing 5'8". So, look, I think Dewey will come in to everyone's question marks, or he'll come into contention at some stage of the season, no doubt. He always does. Moving on, so we've got our Senator wings. Without diving into them overly too much, you know, without the release of cheapies and stuff like that, we won't dive into Staggs or Aiken. Let's talk Brian To'o and Ruben Garrick. Obviously, they're both coming off career best seasons from a super coach perspective, and obviously Panthers won that grand final. I've seen To'o in a lot of teams, but I haven't seen Garrick in too many. Garrick is priced at a ridiculous amount. I just don't think you can start with Garrick.
No, what's your thoughts? I think he's very reliant on attacking stats, and we'll probably go into this more in the rule changes and what we think the outcome is, but we sort of have discussed this a bit off air, it's again in your defensive 40. Like Tom was so quick at getting a quick tap with a tired defense and busting a line from I would say halfway and just breaking through teams, throwing the ball to Garrick. He gets a line break. Even if he doesn't go for the try, he might offload it, pass it to try assist. It just was, yeah, every game he was scoring a try or something, and it's just crazy. Like, I think he broke records for most point scorers for a player. Another one who had, a career year. It's just, you look at the stats where he I think he played five with Tommy in the team, and he has like 107 point average. It's higher than what he's priced at. He's really dependent on Tom. If Tom was to go down, like, there goes Gary. I just couldn't pay that much for a center reliant on scoring when they've got Panthers round one and then they've got the Roosters.
Exactly. Garrick's 20 grand more than David Fifita.
Yeah, and like you can say whatever you want about David Fifita, and people might say, oh, he doesn't have a base, but you're not paying for David Fifita for his base of a forward.
No.
He's got the attacking upside of one of these centre guys, but he's closer to it. He's hungry for the – like there's games where he is hungry, just like – you can see there – I think there was a bit of frustration going back to him. You can see he was frustrated like a few times, like that night's game. He's like, give me the ball. He like got it from a tap and just saw it 6 meters out and just went over. Like you can see, I think if he just matures a bit more for Fifita, but like Garrick, yeah, I just couldn't pay that for Garrick.
No way. Definitely not. 767,000 in your centre wings. He'd be the only premium centre wing you'd have and the rest would just be all bottom dollar cheapies, which I don't think we're going to see too many of them this season. They all seem to be around the 250, your Tago, your Penasini. Obviously, Suwali is very, very popular. Your Mone is available down in Senator Wing as well. They're all around this 250 to 350, 350 mark. I think that's what we'll be looking at to start the season this year.
Yeah, and it just affects your whole team makeup for a guy who you're reliant on getting that try or two tries a week. Every week and kicking, like if you think the point scoring is going to go down, like his goal kicking is going to come down a couple of points. Like you might lose a try a game and a few goals, and there's like 30, 35 points, say, off his average. Just spitballing. Like To'o, I could see a world where you start with him, but because of his base and how high it is. But I was just looking at him the other day because he was getting some mentions. And even he has a – and I know this is just looking at the last game, but he has a 79-point average with a high score of 121 against Manly in round four without Tom. But then you throw in his last game against Parra in round 25 and he had his highest score of the year of 164. So he's got a 79 without that, and then you put that in, it jumps up to 84. So that's 5 points there, just that one game froze out. And I'm not saying he can't do that, he can't score three tries a game, but that just froze 5 points. And someone was saying, like, even if, say, because we're looking at Tylan May, and if he got the other side position, the other wing spot, and Staines was dropped for any reason because he doesn't do much out the back, Tylan May could take a few of his hit-ups and first tackle options, a scoot from, say, the winger gets it, To'o gets it, he has a run, then next one, Tylan May has a run. Brian To'o had to, like, run for two wingers sometimes.
Yeah, he did. He got a lot of return kick meters and hit-ups through that back end of the field, eh?
Yeah, and another thing I'll watch too is if Stephen Crichton does move back to left centre. Because, like, it's been said a lot about many Panthers centres, about how they're glue hands.
Glue hands, yeah.
But I'm like Crichton's a superstar, but I honestly think, and I've heard this a lot, and I agree, like, I think he played his best on the right. His passing was a bit better. But, yeah, if he goes back to the left, like, it's better for him running off Luai. But yeah, he has got that base that you're gonna get. It's consistent. He can get the try on the wing, like that's gonna happen. But it's at the price point and not knowing what centers we have. Like you could get like a Katoni Staggs, which I know a lot of people have got. I know he's high in percentage. I know some people are against it, but he's like at 433, nearly a bit under 300k under him. Who could go on like a 65, 70 point average over the first few rounds. And if you're worried about his injury, you put him up to To'o.
Yeah.
I just think it's like center wing, like the old school, you look at it, you try and make money there. It's really hard. Like, it is good to have like a stable guy locked in, but that's when we were looking at guys at like 500, 550, not 760,000, not 730,000. Like, it's just crazy.
These Senator Wing starting prices, I've never seen anything like. I've been, you know, 10-year avid Supercoach player, and Senator Wing starting at 700,000 is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got a Combat Turbo at 1.2 and Cleary at your near million as well. It's hard to fit them all in.
Yeah, it is.
Perfect segue, Turbo. Now we'll touch on the fullbacks. So, obviously, Tedesco and Pappenhuyzen are the two standouts. They're in everyone's side. I think Turbo's owner percentage is still under 10. Last time I checked, I believe he's at 8% ownership. With the new rules introduced this year, you can see ownership with your Supercoach Gold. What's your thoughts on Tedesco and Pappenhuyzen? On Tedesco, I think Tedesco carried that team last year, and he was still making good numbers, good averages. I think this year is going to be different. Obviously, Cleary's back, and Cleary just lifts the averages of everyone in that team when he's back. He creates points around him. Tedesco finished with an 86 average last year, and to me, he's got a lot more to push for.
I completely agree with you. Like I think I know a lot of people. This is just talking about Cleary for a second. I know a lot of people are high on him, but I think being more mature, he'll take. I'm sort of getting like I'm not on it. I don't think I can get behind Cleary, just because I think the role he's going to play coming back from an ACL, he's going to be more that Cooper Cronk.
Yeah.
Get Tedesco the ball in the right spot. You look at their injuries, like I just was thinking about looking at it the other day. Like, they had Cleary, who went down in round three, ACL gone. They were looking at Lachlan Lamb and I think Hutchinson, because Walker was talked up and then he wasn't ready. So he wasn't ready for round one, but then he was forced to play pretty much by round four or five. They lost Boyd Cordner, they lost Jake Friend. So two club players, like two decent grand final premiership winners. They lost Brett Morris, who was on an absolute tear, like again, like highest, he was the highest winger at the time. I think now Josh Morris is retired as well. Collins went down with an ACL and he was killing it, and he had a game there. Like, I was looking at him and I'm looking at him because I'm comparing him in Utamunga at the moment. I think that's how you say it, Stefano. But like, even someone said the other day, he had a game where he was concussed. So like, that I didn't even factor that into it. So like, Collins, they lost him, who's a big forward. They had Radley coming back from his ACL, and Verrills coming back from ACL, and what's the coach's name? Robson sort of kept them slow return to make sure they were ready for that return.
So he looks after them, doesn't he? When they come back from injury, he doesn't baby them, but he definitely looks after them. He wants to make sure that they're 100% fit before he throws them back out on the paddock full time.
Which is what sort of got me to concerning Cleary. I know we're talking about Tedesco, but Cleary is with Watson. If Roosters are far ahead, up high, because a lot of people are putting them as like a top two at least, like, or in the grand final with all their players coming back, and the recruitments they've done is pretty smart. Like, if they're putting them in the top two or grand final, like, if they're way ahead, does Cleary come off and Watson goes into that sixth role? So that's a question.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought of that.
I think honestly, like, you look at round one and two when Tedesco was playing with Cleary, and I know they played Manly without Tommy Trbojevic, so that was a pretty down Manly, because you know how much he carries that team. In the first two rounds, he had
162.
Yeah, in round one, he had 162. In round two, he had 111 against the West Tigers. He was having, it was like 130 average in them two games. Now, I'm not saying he can keep that up, but it was uncharacteristic of Teddy how many times he would force an error last year, because I think he was honestly just trying too hard. He had the captain ban. He had kicking it for some points and that extra pressure, and he was terrible at that. I think sometimes he was like getting in there to throw, push Walker out of the way because Walker wasn't giving him the ball. We were like screaming at it sometimes. Yeah, he was killing him. But I think if they can work on their combinations and they are the team that everyone expects them to be, but Roosters can put points on. And I think, like, you look the year before, James Tedesco was the highest priced player. And it was like, do we start with Tedesco? And I think this year, like, that's the reason why I'm off Tom Trbojevic, because obviously he's so priced. But, like, I think you can get a lot of value and get really close to the point average from a James Tedesco and a Pappenhausen.
Definitely, 100%. So just a few more stats here. Like, just got Tedesco's up here at the moment. So he scored that hat-trick round one last year. Then round two, he scored a double. Then he scored a try round three, round four. That's all against Manly, Tigers, Rabbitohs and Warriors, I think it was. Yep, that's right, yeah. And he didn't, and that's obviously when all those injuries occurred. So Keary went down, Collins, they all started falling, the poor Roosters. And Teddy didn't score a try himself until round 22 against the Broncos.
Yeah, I just saw that too.
And that's un-Teddy-like. But you start stripping players away from that Roosters side and obviously leave Teddy there, he doesn't struggle. He definitely didn't struggle. Obviously, he's finished with that 86 average, but he just wasn't the same. Something I did hear on another podcast the other week was that Teddy, over the last 3 years that he's been with the Roosters, Teddy averages 724 touches for the season. Last year, he put out 881. So obviously, Teddy has just got his hands on the ball for the 2021 season, trying to do more, trying to create and maybe making them unforced errors, which you touched on before, but he's always in the game. Like we mentioned about Haas before, that effort that Haas puts just correlates as well to Teddy. Teddy's always there somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm expecting a big year from Tedesco this year. I wouldn't be surprised if either Tedesco or Pappenhausen take the mantle for the highest scoring fullback over Tom Trbojevic this year.
And I know, like, people say, yeah, Tommy's got he's got a 226 and he's got a 229 point games in him, and the 226 was in 68 minutes, so that could have been anything. But we haven't seen, like, he came into round six, Tom, and Manly were struggling. I don't know if they'd won a game. They were struggling, and it was like, all right, well, we need to start winning games. And then, like, he was sort of protected. He played 72 minutes, 64. He didn't play a lot of full, like, he did have a few games where he didn't play the full 80. Like, is that something going forward to protect him? Like, if you want to keep him for the whole season and he's going to play State of Origin, there's a risk there. And in saying that, like, the 229 and the 226 are 208 game scores. Teddy had, like you saw in round one, 162. He had 146 in round 19 against Newcastle. And Roosters were pretty decimated by then, and they have Knights round one this year. He had 131 against North Queensland. I know that's like 70 points, 100 points underneath what Tommy had. He had 182 against St. George in round 23. And I did hear he had 146 or something against Titans in the semi-final. So he still has that 146 without the Roosters at their best. And like you said, he scored, yes, he had them four games at the start of the year where he scored tries consecutively, and then he didn't score another try until round 22. So if he has more room to just go himself and score a try, and I think I'd take him as one of the types that looks at like a Tom Trbojevic and goes, all right, well, if he's going to take this mantle as number one fullback, I'm looking at his game. I'm going to try and change my game slightly to improve.
And keep in mind, throughout the course of the season, obviously Teddy missed some games due to Origin. What did he miss? He missed, maybe just bring it back up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, he missed 5 games for the season. What was he?
He had that
concussion carryover.
And then he had, remember in Origin, and he busted his ass, but he still had a padding on his hip.
Yeah.
So it was like that would have hampered his performance.
I can see he only played 34 minutes in round 7 against the Dragons. So
yeah, I think he might have got a head knock. But I did hear that like, on a pod that he has had some stem cell on his knee over the off season, and that might be. He said it's feeling good, but it might be because of how much extra running he was having to do. But he was also in high. Like he did say, he was really enjoying the off season because it was the first time he'd actually had an actual off season. Because I think last year they had with obviously COVID, they had the State of Origin in the after the regular season. And the year before that, they'd won the grand final and they had the World Cup Challenge. So that's 2 years where he hasn't had like that extra bit of preseason that everyone else has to have a bit of rest and recoup. So if he's fit and fire and ready to go with the team back, it's like I can see, like, I don't want to say, yeah, he's going to smash out 110, 150, like at least 100-point average, and then he's 20 points, like at least 15 points underpriced.
To start the season, yes.
Yeah.
Like last year, Teddy put out 7 tons and four games in the 90s.
Yeah.
So I'm with a full-strength Roosters side, I'm picking Teddy to increase his average by 20, surely.
Yeah, easy.
Definitely. Pappenhausen. What's your thoughts on Pappenhausen this year? Obviously, he had that massive concussion drama back in the season, and everyone could see when he come back to that Melbourne side, he was very skittish, very standoffish, coming in defence, attacking the line as well. His scourge showed that, but he was coming from the bench, of course. We've already touched on it in that Melbourne Storm outfit now. If you've got those three players, your Munster, your Grant, your Pappenhausen, all fighting fit, I think they'll be tearing apart teams. I think Pappenhausen's a must-have start for any Supercoach side this season. He'll be goal-kicking as well.
I think I looked at it. The games where Hines was goal-kicking was like an average of 16 points a game or something. The games he played at fullback without Pappenhausen in, and I think a few games they struggled, like they had Munster taking a few kicks. But yeah, say like 16 points of goal kicking, I would say, into it. Like, so which the first four games, you look at him and he plays, he played the full 80 for the first four games, and then he played a 65 minutes against Sydney. So I think that's when he did his AC, and he missed that game. And then he had a few games off because of that and then came back and then got obviously taken out by Philly Mayono. And then Hines came on and just brained it from there. Like you said, he did come back in like round 20, 19, 20, and he played a few minutes off the bench and he just didn't look like the player he was. But I think by round 23, when he started to get 80 minutes there, like he started to build into it again. He played 80 minutes for the last three. Scores of 101, 71, 131. There was, for some reason, I don't know why, and this only picked this up the other day, he didn't goal kick in the last one in the 25, round 25 against Sharks, and Hines was actually playing and he goal kicked over him. So I don't know what that was, maybe a little niggle or something. They just preferred Hines, obviously, because he was there, but I don't think there's anyone there. Like someone said, Meany the other day, but I don't even know if he's going to make the round one team. But if you look at just them four, five, six, seven games of 80 minutes, he's got 115-point av. Even with them, the 80-minute games at the end and the 80-minute games at the start, with a low score of 71 and 73. And another surprising, I looked into finals, and it's not always just to, like, don't trust it all the time because they're tougher games, but in the finals, in that first semi, he played Manly, and the Storm flogged Manly 40-12, and he scored 123 points.
Yeah.
And someone like Tommy, who you would say is the better fullback on price, scored 25 in that game. So, like,
really?
Someone did say he got disallowed a try or something, Tommy. So, it's not, like I said, it's not the be all and end all, but like that's, I think by then he was back to like he's where he was, like comfortable. I think his best is probably, like, I know this is hard to say, and I did it, it was the hardest thing to do, but I captained him against the Broncos. And he had that round off against Penrith in round three as a concussion, and then he came back in round four against my Broncos. And I just knew, like, the way our defense was, he, it was just terrible. And Broncos actually stuck it to him for a good, like, I think 20 minutes, and it kept a real low-scoring game. And then in four, in like 12 minutes, I think he scored four tries and he hit 197 points. So
straight,
I think,
up the middle. Straight up, yeah, the middle, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think, honestly, if, like, if Melbourne have, like we said before, their first choice preferred spine on the field, I can see, like, at least 115-point av.
See, that's the issue I have. If we're being strategic and starting with Pappenhausen, starting with Grant, starting with Munster, that's three of the Storm top guns, you know. I just feel that they can't all score 100 points a game. But
they can't, but they do. It's
they could. Yeah, they could. Look at, you know, after we just had that chat, they definitely could.
You said that today, but like people looking at like Hughes, and Hughes was scoring 70s and Hines was scoring 115s, and then you've still got Brandon Smith going over for a try, and Grant was getting 70 or 80 off the bench, or 60 off the bench, and Munster's there plodding along on his 75. Like, I think the Storm, you can pick all of their spine players, but other than that, I just don't think you can pick anyone else in the Storm side.
No one else jumps out, eh?
No.
All right, do you want to talk about Tommy Turbo to wrap up the fullback section? We don't have to spend too much time on him. I don't think many people are starting with him. If you're starting with Tommy Turbo at $1.25 million, there's just no cap for anywhere else. It really does. I've tried the Tommy Turbo teams, I have, and it doesn't look or feel right. You're very understrength everywhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't wish injury on anyone, but, like, this is the first – it wasn't even a full season. And I know he's done recovery. I know he's done his rehab. But it's the first full sort of season we've seen him play. And it's like, it was amazing. But I think I keep looking at, like, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong here, but everyone's saying about the rule changes. And like we said, we're going to get into that another ep. But looking at, like, I remember, like, even when he played the Broncos, like, they were down to, I think we had with them, quick taps he was doing, he was just like playing with him, and we had like I know our guy, the Broncos, probably weren't fit enough to handle it, but like we had two sin bins, so he was playing against 11 men sometimes, and he was just carving up. So I think if, and that came in, like they had that real high sin bin crackdown, and like for a while he had players getting sent off and suspended, and then next, like, a couple of weeks later, no one was getting sin bin for the same thing. You're like, well, what's happening here? But then you look at their draw, and they've got Panthers, which last year were a very strong team against fullbacks. I think they were the highest, keeping fullbacks to the lowest scores. And then they've got Sydney Roosters, which everyone's saying they're going to be a full-strength team. They're going to be top two. So I think they're going to really take it to them. So, yeah, just for me, like, he could come out in round three and just destroy the Bulldogs, but the Bulldogs have got, like, Gus Gould, I think, is probably the best signing there for him, like, because he's, like, he's been able to build Panthers up. He's helped the Warriors last year. I think that's going to bring a lot of lot to that club. And then they've got Raiders, who, yep, give away a lot of points to fullbacks, and then Nets, yeah, and then Gold Coast. So the draw is very scary, like them round 4, 5, 6, 7 for non-turbo owners, but at 1.2, it just really eats into the rest of your team.
Manly are untouched too. Hey, like, they haven't really signed anyone. They haven't let anyone go, you know, of pedigree value or anything like that. They're pretty much running the same side as they were last season. So
yeah, my other concern is, like I said before, like, we haven't seen him play a full season. And if Des knows he's so integral to Manly having any chance at a premiership or going into the finals, does he protect him? Like, does he not give him, like, does he, like, do they get ahead and he might have had an involvement in two or three tries? They give him like 60 minutes and pull him off. Put Garrick back, put someone like, if they have a Burbo on the bench, put him in the centre. Like, I know it's, this is theoretical, but that could happen. Like, you want to protect your best player when he's.
We can't put Burbo in there, mate. We'll have no loop option. Burbo's the gun flipper.
Oh. But yeah, so I don't know. I think we're both in agreement that it's too expensive.
Yeah, there's no real in-depth discussion around Turbo. I just feel you just can't start with him. You can't start under strength everywhere else. Look, Turbo's going to fall money. He's going to lose money. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But look, he could quite easily make it up. But that's just not a risk I'm going to take. Like, I've often thought about, you know, even if you do start with Turbo for that round one and two, I know they're tough matchups, but, you know, if he was to pump out a 120 and then, you know, even another 120, he loses, what, 50,000, I think we worked out to be. But if he manages to notch up a 140 and then like a 170, which he's quite capable of doing in round two, then he goes up 30,000. But I just don't think he can keep that momentum. There's no way Turbo is going to stay at that 1.25 million for the entire season. My strategy was to have him, you know, start of the season, playing for round one and two, see how he goes. And, you know, if he was to pump out that 150, 160, 170, you know, then hold him. But if his if his BE does creep up to like, you know, your 200 plus or whatever, then you could flip him round three with the extra trades we've got and whatnot. But could you imagine if you're starting with Turbo and he knocks out them 170s for the first two rounds, people will be tearing apart their teams to get him, and you'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah.
But again, that's a massive risk.
I'm just ignoring him. Like,
don't talk to me. Just sit over there, Turbo. Yeah.
I think if you did start him, honestly, I think you'd have to, because I've heard some people say, all right, if I started with Tommy, I'd have to have Ryan Pappenhausen as my reserve. I honestly think to have a structured, balanced team, you'd have to go just Turbo. And maybe because Tedesco and Pappenhausen together are like 200 grand more. So I think you'd have to go to Tommy and maybe like a 200K player there, because it's just, like you said, then if like he didn't do what you expected, he didn't hit his break even, you could trade him down and trade that other guy to Teddy and Pappenhausen, and then you could still structure your team similar to having a Teddy and Pappenhausen. But yeah, for me, it's like, would you sell him if he was if you started with him? That's the big question. You don't sell him.
And the other, you could, on the other double-edged sword there, you could flip the coin on the other side. If you're starting with Tedesco and Pappenhausen, it'd be hard to sell one of them to upgrade to Turbo. Like, last year it was easy because Pappenhausen's concussion, he was gone. Everyone got rid of Pappenhausen and brought in Turbo if they didn't already have him. But this year, with those three gun fullbacks, hopefully they can all provide that they all stay fit.
Yeah,
it'd be hard to start with Teddy and Pappy and try to reach for a Turbo. Like you said, you're probably just best to just try ignore him and death ride him in a few games or something.
Yeah, it's going to be hard, but he'll bust out 120, but hopefully like a 200 game. But hopefully, like Tedesco and Pappenhausen can do something similar. But yeah,
they're quite capable.
Yeah.
Another man quite capable is the fellow we brushed over before. We actually skipped him, actually. So Nathan Cleary in the halfback spot. I've got Cleary in my side at the moment. I think he's always been in my starting side. There has been a few monetary reasons as to why I've swapped him here and there, but you and I have discussed off air. I think Cleary is a must-have start. I think he offers more value than what Turbo would, even though he's, you know, that 300,000 cheaper, but he's sort of still touching on that $1 million. The next best halfback, I don't even know who it is, and I'm not even going to look who it is, because, you know, there is daylight second compared to the next best halfback. Again, if you're starting with Cleary, it's a absolute set and forget in my eyes. And I think if you don't start with Cleary, you're going to fall behind in the pack very quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was at the start, every year I pick Cleary first, put him in, lock him in. And I was just like, no, nah, not this year, too expensive. Struggling to put a good team together with him. But looking at his, what he, how high above other halfbacks he is, like the next best halfback is Daly or DCE at like 30 points under him. And that's not even taken into consideration. Like if you just look at before he injured his shoulder, he was on 114 point average. So that's more, that's like a 35 points ahead of DCE. Now, I'm not saying he's going to do that. Like, I could see a world where he drops down to 100 average. But it is very likely that he stays at like that 100, 105. And even if he drops to that average, we're saying because of the rules or whatever changes, last year was a career year for him. You could say the same for Daly Cherry Evans. You could say the same for Nico Hines, who was out of position. Jerome Hughes, all them guys there that are under him, all their averages are going to drop as well. So I can't see a world where if he drops, say, down to that 100 average, how he's dropping any more than 150,000, and you're going to get to him in one trade. It's going to cost 2-3 trades, one of your boosts, I reckon, to do it. And you look at his draw, and like I wasn't even looking at Panthers' draw at the start, but their toughest game is round one, Manly. And now he played them twice. Yeah, he played them twice last year for 103 points in round four and a 69 in round eight. So even if it's at 69, I'm happy with that because after that he plays, let me look at it, St. George, who might be tough, but he's like he had good scores against them. Newcastle, who could be like, who could have been touched up by Roosters in round one. He had that amazing last game of 2019. He scored 186 against the Knights. He loves, I think he enjoys playing the Knights. So that's a scary match not to own him.
Then everyone's going to enjoy playing the Knights this season.
He's got Souths, who we're already saying, like, and you as a Souths fan, like you're saying, they might struggle up to that round or over that period. So like a Souths team who might have had some tough battles or, like against Melbourne, like Melbourne could touch them up. Then Bulldogs, Broncos, Raiders, Gold Coast, like that that eight rounds, I think they've got the best draw on paper.
Yeah, the shoulder injury is the mention with a lot as well, the concern there, but it hasn't really factored into my mind when picking him for your team. He missed them six rounds towards like the third quarter of the season. He come back in that round 22 against the Dragons, and he scored an 82. Then he went to score an 86 and a 100, turned up, and then he scored 89 against Power in round 25. So he's, after injuring that shoulder, he didn't have surgery then, but he come back with it a bit gingerly and stuff like that. He's still making, you know, 90 average for those last four games of the season. And I don't think the shoulder injury is going to be any concern with him. Like, there's all this talk about him not being fit for round one and Panthers might not play him, but I can't see that happening. I can see him just hitting the ground running where he left off, Nathan Cleary.
I heard this the other day, or today, even, like, I think Panthers are trying to push for him to play one trial. And then, like, I heard from, like I said, the NRL physio on another pod the other day, and he said that if he's doing everything correctly with his rehab, and we saw that when he came back in round 22, like he was pushing to get ready for that. So he was doing his rehab properly when his shoulder was still injured, playing with that. If he's doing that all right, he has no mishaps, he should be fine to go round one. Now, if he's ready to go and he plays round one, I think round one, they actually have that's the first game on the Friday night. So we get to see that. And I'm locking him in if he's ready to go, because like even NRL physio said, with that shoulder injury, it's not like he's a forward, and he's like, yes, Cleary has such a high base, but with his tackles and things like that, but he's not going to be getting smashed like, say, Cameron Murray, who's had shoulder surgery over the offseason, one of these guys. Like, I think I'm just going to lock him in, not worry about it. Yes, it's pricey, but then my half spot's like pretty much like, you look at the games he's played over the last 3 years and he's rarely out. So he's consistent. in that regard. Like, I know COVID's a whole different story, but he rarely misses a game. Even when, like, I think, remember he's had the infection or something on his face, he put out a massive score that game. He's got such a high base. Like, his lowest score last year was 54 against the Bulldogs, which no one would have predicted, because I think a lot of people VC'd him or captained him, thinking he was going to flog him. And he had a 54. But that was round 12 before State of Origin. And we saw what Tom Trbojevic did. He did a 45 or something against the Knights. So that is capable, but that was his lowest score. Then his next one was 69. And then other than that, everything's above. He had a 76. And then everything above that, even with his injured shoulder, was above 80. He's not going to give you the highs of Trbojevic as often. He had a 225 in there, so it is capable. If he gets like a bad team on a day, like he can go over for a try, go for two tries. He gets that hunger about him. The one other thing I was thinking about with Cleary is, like, well, they've lost Momirovsky, Burton, even Pangai and Capewell. Their spine hasn't changed that much. They've still got Edwards there who doesn't do a lot in the Supercoach, but he is a solid fullback for them. He's got Luai outside him, who's played for a few years. Appy's there, even though he's going, he'll still play like he will, I feel. So their spine's still the same, relatively untouched. And the team knows that structure. It's really difficult not to, like, now I've actually looked into it, not to pick him. He's just solid. You know what you're going to get. He's so far above anyone else in that position. And there's so many question marks. Like, we'll go into it, but it's just like, do you really want all that stress?
No, you don't. And look, even if he wasn't fit and fighting to start round one, if he was to miss round one, you're in the same boat as your Grant and your Munster strategy, you know what I mean? You've got your Blake Taff, you've got your Ilias, your Hastings that can fill in there for round one, and then you play him. And that probably works in advantage as well, you know. Think of more strategy on it. If you pick Cleary and he wasn't ready for round one and you bench him, play your Taff, Ilias, or whoever you do, people are going to make the decision come the end of round two what they're going to have to do in regards to the trades for money value up or down with whoever they're playing, wherever they've got. Cleary's still got one more game to play before you see what's going to happen with his price market. So people might sort of fall into that sort of trap on that trade round where all the prices change, where Cleary's still got one game to go. So does Grant and Munster.
Yeah.
So they've got to play three. So
the only thing I'd say there is that, like, Grant and Munster aren't coming off an injury. So, like, if he doesn't play round one, I said before, it would be hard to pick him. Like, if, say, David Fifita was on the bench, it'd be hard in the sense that does Cleary Senior just say, oh, yeah, he'll be ready next week, and then he's not named round two, or they play silly buggers and name him and then pull him out last minute. And, like, I just, like, Munster and Grant, if you know they're fit and firing for round one, but they're just suspended. But Cleary, if he's not starting round one, I think I would start to question it.
And yeah,
hearing everything, it sounds like he's ready to go. Yeah. And I think he's really hungry too this year. Like, I know,
he's
missed out twice now for Dally M. And, like, people say, like, I try to say, oh, yeah, I feel the Panthers are going to slide. They've got a great young crop of players coming through. And, like I said, the spine hasn't changed that much. Remember the year before they got to the grand final, got pipped by Storm. This is a team that, like, have, I think, until Storm had the 19 wins in a row last year or whatever it was, Panthers did that the year before, like, and they were winning a lot of games last year, except for, like, having, what, five or six or seven players in State of Origin. So, like, it's a team that, with Cleary, who's just won the Blue Series, won the Grand Final, he's now a really experienced half, and he gets points anyway.
Yeah, you talk Cody Walker and his junk points. Cleary gets a lot of junk points too. But
that's the main thing.
He's a king of junk points.
He's a unicorn. Like, if you don't pick him, you're missing out on them unicorn points.
Oh, look, Cleary's amazing. He's great to watch. He's you know, his game sense is unreal. Like, he's going to be up there with your Thurstons and your Lockyers and all that sort of stuff, you know, in years to come. You can't deny that. So I think Ivan will look after him injury-wise you know, this coming year and whatnot, I don't think he'll rush him back.
No.
If he's not 110% fit, he's not going to be playing round one. So you're right, that will be the definite indication of where you can go, whether he's named for round one or not.
Yeah. I know I think it'd be a world where you have to live with, all right, well, I'll pick two other guys that could get to him or could make 100, 150K each.
Mm.
So you have to sacrifice other places to have them sort of players in positions ready to trade him up for, say, Cleary, if he's named round three or four. Because even knowing, like, yes, his price won't change, I think with that draw, if he came back in round two, three or four, you'd want him as soon as he's ready. Because otherwise, when do you get him? You'd have to wait till what? You wait. If you get him any closer to State of Origin, you're like getting him in for a game. He could get rested because a lot of them got rested over State of Origin last year. Like, there's no real point then. Like, and you miss out on so, like, such a can that 30, 35 points above the next best half. And I'm not saying you're going to start with that best half.
I think even if he wasn't named, I think if he was not named for round one, I'd still keep him in my starting side. I'd just bench him like Grant. He'll be back round two. He'll be back for He's back for Dragons and then Newcastle. I think Cleary'd one arm against Newcastle is still going to pump out your 85, sure.
I think he'll be back because, like, you saw last year, he's a hard worker. Like, you saw he got through the rehab to come back then. Like, I think he's had the shoulder surgery. Everything's went right. I think he'll track right to come back into contention and play. It's his team and he'll want to be there for that team.
108 average last year. Do you think he can maintain that this year?
Well, I don't know. I think, like, there's a world where I could see a 100-point average, but, like, that's going, like, say, a 15-point drop from his start of. So, like, I know he's priced at 108, but if he didn't get injured, like, he could have kept that 115 sort of average he had up to round 12 or 15. So if he continues that, like, I could see if we see any sort of prices, any points change because of, like, fatigue, less fatigue, some of the rule change, whatever. I could see a world where he averages 100, and I still think if that was the case, that would mean, say, DCE drops 10, 15 points, Hughes drops 10, 15 points. I still see him as, like, out and out 30 points ahead of anyone else.
He is. His average is huge compared to the others. Like, you put him in a list from top to bottom, you've got your Cleary, Hines, Hughes, and then Sam Walker at four. So yeah. And we all know, you know, Sam Walker, his average didn't finish that well.
Yeah, and then it's like Hines and like Hughes, you know me, I've said a few times that I think Hughes has his best scores or best games when, say, a Munster or a Pappy or a Grant's out. He takes a lot of leadership there. He has developed a lot. Then you got your Hines, who's gone to a new system, and I think he's new club, and I think his average is propped up from fullback and goal kicking, and we don't know if he's locked in for the goal kicking. Sam Walker, a relatively young half, who did end up on the bench, but he has a low, low floor.
Who would take the kicking off Hines? Trindle?
If he gets in, there's a lot of talk that he's not. Like, I don't know. It's just like it's a new club. It's a new combo. It's like Fitzgibbon's more of a defensive coach. You're going from the Storm, who scored, like, who had a record winning 19 wins or whatever it was. And going into, I'm not saying the Sharks aren't going to be good, but it's going to take him a few games to sort of gel and see what type of game play Fitzgibbon wants to have. Like, if they want to just be a defensive team, that takes them attacking points out.
I'm excited to see the Sharks this year, actually. I'm not a Sharks fan by any stretch, but I'm very excited to see what they can do this season.
I think they'll be a tough side because they've got a really good middle and their halves are, like, young and like, Hines can play. Like, I think he's priced above his average.
Yeah, I agree. I think everyone can see that as well. Hines is definitely priced too high coming from that Storm lineup over to the Sharks there. All right, mate, that might just about do. I think we'll wrap it up there. We've been waffling on for quite a while. Really good chat, mate. Really, really good chat.
Yeah, I would say it was a good chat, and it's good to kick this off and start have thought about it for a while. In all the guys we went over, like, I'm high on, say, David Fifita, and we're both sort of high on starting Grant, Nathan Cleary. even to Tedesco and Pappenhausen, like, if you're high on someone and you've got a reason why you want them and want to start with them, you feel or you saw something or you've looked at the stats yourself, I would say back your gut. That's the main thing. But yeah, we're just trying to give our sort of opinion and see where we think a player's overs or reasons why they're over versus like Cleary may well be over. I'm saying he could be 15 points over priced and come down to that 100 average, but I still don't see him dropping more than 100K. So it's like reasons why we would lock them in.
Yes, that's right. Get those guns locked in. All right, guys, that just about concludes our podcast for our first one. I do apologize for the length of this one. Future pods definitely won't be going for this long. I hope you got a lot out of it, whether to start with them guns or whether to hold. We'll see you guys on the next one. Thanks for tuning in.